Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. It is now time for Inside Matters, Spiritual Talk, Healing Done Right, Spiritual Growth, 12-Step Indigo Meditation, and much, much more, hosted by Duchess and Jules.
Just love eight soldiers and how it just opens up the wire in the line for me and for Bio. Hi, for Bio. I see you there.
Hello, hello.
I bet you thought I wasn't gonna open up your mic today, right? Just took me
too long.
No, I was sitting here and I had my eyes, you know, on the lights, on the screen, and I was just contemplating how I was gonna open this thing up because I am just so thrilled. I found out today that daylight savings time is going to be March the 11th. Do you know what that means for those people who suffer with SAD, seasonal attention deficit, whatever that thing is called?
Mm-mm-mm.
I am so thrilled. It was an accident that I found that out while I was prepping for the show, you know? So,
mm-mm-mm.
How you been? Before we start, I want to know how you been.
I'm hanging in there. I'm doing all right. I'm doing fine.
Okay.
What can I say?
I missed you.
Yeah.
We had Mother's 90th birthday luncheon, and it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too bad you're not on Facebook. You'd be able to see all the pictures. It was really phenomenal, you know. And, before we start the show, I want to share some stuff that's been going on with this month's energy and after I do that, then we can get started with other things. I was looking at the fact that there was this article I was reading about it being a powerful statement. a powerful statesman overcomes a state of political hysteria. And basically what this guy was saying is that political hysteria is a fine description for what we're going through in the United States of America and all around us. And he talked about that there is a need for leadership to rise above the fray and take control. But what was interesting about this article was that he was saying that we are all leaders and we can take leadership of our own selves and get order and control within ourselves and begin to think of the chaos that is around us and take leadership in correcting that. And I thought that was a beautiful thing. One of the things I decided to do this weekend without knowing it was that I took leadership of the chaos in my office space. I filed every single thing that had been collecting in a box under my desk. It just needed to be filed and put away. And after the show, I'm going to start the shredding of stuff that I just sorted out from it. And it looks so much better. It makes me feel like I have some sort of control in my life, in my space, you know?
Right.
Our topic for today is that spiritual awakening is an inside job. And once we take hold of that, that leadership within ourselves, we'll realize that we have more control over things by taking control over ourselves and not trying to do an outward control thing of other people. So I do want to share with everyone, including you, some words from Lena Stevens's energy power path for the month of March, and she was basically saying that we need to look at creative adaptability. And she says that many of us are leaving February in a state of grumpy resistance to how things are unfolding, both personally and globally. Now, we all have a bit of stubbornness that we may not even be aware of that sets our patterns of reaction and expectations. It is almost as if we expect things to be difficult and unpleasant so we can justify our grumpiness and negative attitudes about life. I know I go through that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It is time we change all that and step into a more proactive role in how we experience our lives. Any victim mentality suggests that we truly believe someone or something else is running our lives when, in fact, it is we collectively that are creating the very circumstances we actually have the power to change. Now, we talked in previous shows about how we create our own reality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this requires abandoning our position of resistance and negative futility, rising ourselves up into the highest centers whenever possible, and facing each challenge, not with resignation, but with creative inspiration to find a new way. We need to be adaptable, not only in a resigned acceptance, but rather in a way that has us creating new recipes using familiar ingredients. We think about who we are and what we are, and we know how we've been doing things forever and a day. Well, we can use those same ingredients, but we can do them in a slightly different way. Lena goes on to say that creativity is a key element this month. Creativity. We need to take present situations that are unsatisfactory and be proactive about changing them by thinking and acting creatively and outside the box of our own ways of thinking and acting. Solutions will appear when we can release our judgments of others as well as our positions of being right. Being right only serves to solidify and anchor a pattern that will not serve us in the end, as it leaves no room for creativity. To stimulate creativity, practice doing little things in a new way. And I'm having to do this because I'm looking ahead at a surgery on my dominant side. They're getting ready to go into my right shoulder, and that is the dominant side that I use all the time. So I begun myself to practice doing things a new way. In this instance that Nina was giving, you know, drive a different set of roads to a known destination. Well, I'm having to force myself to brush my teeth with my left hand, to use my fork with my left hand. I'm doing things with I plan on, I'm going to have to sign a number of checks in advance, because if I start trying to write checks with my left hand, the bank's probably not going to cash them. They're going to think she can sign these checks. But what Nina is saying is change your schedule around a bit. Bring some color and sound into your environment. Be creative around your meals. If you find yourself judging anything, move yourself into a place of neutrality as quickly as possible. When you are in neutral, you always have a choice. When not in neutral, you eliminate your choice, and this can lead to feeling stuck. So that's the creativity aspect of the energy Lena is talking about. Now let's go into the adaptability. Adaptability is being open to change, paying attention to how it wants to manifest, and then taking action. This is not adaptability in the old way of being flexible by resigning yourself to accepting a situation, but still harboring disappointment and resentment. Creative adaptability takes it one step further and actually uses the opportunity to try a different approach or make an actual change. She gives an instance, if you were planning to go to the movies and then suddenly there is a change of plans acknowledge that you now have a block of time to do something creative with instead of being resigned and disappointed about a ruined evening. If you have been laid off, well, if I have this surgery on my shoulder, I'm going to be laid off for quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And I've been really resentful and scared and feeling like I'm going to be dependent on everybody and what am I going to do? I won't be able to go to work. But in looking at me being creative, using some creative adaptability, I might start thinking about sitting in front of my computer and maybe writing this book that I've always wanted to write, or getting out and walking and doing some exercise with my neighbor. You know, there are a lot of things that I can do with that time creatively rather than sulking around knowing that I won't be able to drive for 4 weeks because I'll be in a sling. There are creative ways that I can change that around to a positive. Lena goes on to say, you may find that the creative solutions that come from being willing to let go of the attachment to how awful it all is and embrace the possibility of something new that you haven't thought of before will in fact improve and upgrade current situations beyond your expectations. So try it. When you create a new recipe, you take a few risks in mixing known ingredients together in a new way and then adding some new spices you haven't used before. Mm-hmm. Some may not make the grade, but others will offer exciting new tastes. Restaurants do this kind of thing a lot. So, but she wants you to remember that while you're going through this creative adaptability, remember some things, okay? You want to get on with your life the way you need to at this time through being creative, inspired, adaptable, willing, and proactive. But you're going to have to know that you will need to pay attention to a few things along the way. Now, heed these very carefully. Don't get into martyrdom. Watch the tendency to blame and feel victimized. There is no power in that. So take responsibility for your own creations. In being responsible, you take the power back that enables you to change what you don't like. 2, self-deprecation. Don't tie your self-worth into situations that you create to force change, like losing your job or being rejected from something you thought you wanted. Learn to trust spirit that this is all moving you toward a higher picture that will support you better in the long run. 3, too good to be true. When everything is aligned and you are willing, open, and flexible, things can happen very quickly. You know you are on the right track when everything begins to fall into place with ease and grace. My daughter used to say, if it's not elegantly simple, then you're on the wrong path because it unfolds. When spirit's in charge, it does unfold nice if you're following the guidance system that's before you. And 4, attachment to suffering. This is an addiction and a false definition of the right road to heaven. Right. Suffering will get you nowhere, will only keep you grumpy and lead eventually to blame and despair. Mm-hmm. It is time to drop this position and move yourself into a space of enjoying life, which is a much higher frequency than suffering. Much of this can be accomplished simply by changing an attitude. Strive to see the glass half full instead of half empty, and challenging situations as opportunities for growth and improvement rather than the universe conspiring against you. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's wonderful. That today, and it brightened me. It lightened me. Made me feel better about the stuff that I'm getting ready to encounter. You know?
Yeah.
I know you're getting ready to encounter some stuff.
Ooh, all the time. Shoot. It's
so,
always happening in my neck of the woods. Ain't no slowdown. I said it's always happening in my neck of the woods. There is ain't no slowdown where I'm at. You know.
I hear you. What's happening to them little four-legged babies you got out there?
Well, they're growing up, and two of them are just so cute because their mother and father are products of, like, Nigerian dwarf goats and alpine goats. So
is that
right? Right, so these particular males that were born, they must have gotten both of the genes that the parents had for dwarfs because they are dwarf dwarfs. They're even smaller than Nigerian dwarfs. And we're, like, looking at them because when they came out, they were the size of everybody else, but they haven't grown up, you know, got bigger. And so I'm like, these are the cutest little goats. They look like little bitty small dogs. They're a little bit bigger than small dogs, but, you know, about the size of cats. And so I'm like, what is going on here? I have not seen this before. These little ones are too cute. They're not going to be for anything but pets. You're not going to be able to breed them or what have you. They're just going to be pets, company for something, either a horse or, you know, another goat or what have you. Because, you know, horses and goats are herd animals, so they don't like to be left alone. You should always have two of them for socialization. Otherwise, they're miserable and they cry all the time. And they're just sad, you know. So, and even, you know, like the little baby that we see, if I go into another space and the baby can't see me, he just cries and cries and cries until I answer him. And yeah, until I answer him. And then he comes running up to where I'm at, and he's like, okay, I'm fine, you know. So they do that with each other. If they can't see the other goat, they just cry and cry and cry. And then if the other goat answers, either they'll run towards each other, the one that was crying will run towards them, or, you know, or they'll find their way towards each other. But they are socialized to be with company. They don't like to be alone, you know.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so you know, so much has happened this week for me in terms of just my life and the farm and, you know, and the art center and the project that I'm working on in Ghana. And so in relationship to that, a lot of what it is you've talked about has been very present in my conversations with my partner.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of those conversations that we had, we were talking about adaptability and you know, and creative adaptability and creativity, you know, and actually just like trying to watch your tendencies to blame. All of these things just played out, you know, this week for me. And so my partner and I were having a conversation about responsibility. And when you stand in a position of being responsible for yourself and responsible for your own actions, you move out of being in that role of a victim.
Right.
And so you got to kind of look at why it is you choose to have that role of being a victim anyway. What is it serving in your life, you know? And do you really want to continue to hold on to that? And we were talking about things like that, and talking about this thing around being right, you know.
Right.
Right. You know, my family, you know, everybody has their kind of family
dynamic.
Yeah, well, it's not just the dynamic. It's the concept or the precept that you have that's attached to your family. Like, my family thing that we're always talking about is right. Was it right? Am I right? Mm-hmm. You know, are we right? You know, and that thing has, that particular perspective has kept us locked into not being available to move beyond and develop, be as mature adults, really, you know, fully into mature adults.
Right.
And that has nothing about, that's nothing to do with paying bills and all this other stuff. It's about the emotional intellect and the emotional maturity that you have, you know, this thing about being right. And so my partner and I were discussing that, and she's like, you know, so many times in life, when you say right and wrong, your mentality has already set up a situation by which someone has to lose.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
And in a loving relationship, why would you want to set it up so that someone has to lose? You know what I mean? Your proposition is wrong. If you're going into a situation where you love someone and you're trying to build and be better and create a healthier, stronger relationship, and you are beginning a conversation on what's going on between you two, and your conversation, you, yourself, or that other person, is firmly set in, okay, was I right here? Then you've already set yourself up to lose. You lose, too. You see what I'm saying? You lose in the proposition. Instead of saying, okay, is it more important for me to be right, or is it more important for me to be happy? Right, exactly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to kind of change my mindset. I had to, you know, kind of re-look. You know, my family will often say, was I right? And I'm like, okay, all right, we're not going to do that. Are you trying to be right? Are you trying to control the situation? Are you trying to dominate the situation? Or are you trying to be in joy? Where are we going with this?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're trying to be in joy, then you have already set yourself up to lose by not meeting what it is that you need and desire, and set the other person up to lose by putting them in a situation where they can never be. It's a power dynamic, that thing around right.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And there are some people that they're not happy unless they're right.
Right.
All the time.
Exactly.
Damn.
All
you know,
the time.
It's like there's no compromise. There's no give and take. I'm right. You know.
You're wrong. And that's it. And that's the bottom line. My way or the highway. You know. And so I've kind of like had to step back and kind of reexamine some things in relationship to that. And also kind of, like, my friends used to laugh at me when I was younger. As I've gotten older, I think I've become a little bit more inflexible. Because when I was younger, for instance, a friend of mine, I said, when I first moved here to Albany, I didn't have a credit card, and I needed to be able to get around and do things and all this other stuff, right? And I didn't have a car, but I needed a car, a vehicle to do some of the things that I needed to do. And so one of my friends was like, well, what did you do? I said, well, what I did was I went to the U-Haul and I rented one of the smallest vans that they had.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't require that I have a credit card. They only required that I put down a $100 deposit, you see. And
right.
So I could take the car around and drive it, and there's 19 cents a minute, and I can 19 cents a minute and do whatever it is until I use up the $100, you know.
Right.
And she was like, leave it to you to figure out that. I was like, no, what is important is that we understand what the rules are. Now, the rules aren't in place to hamstring us. The rules are in place as guidelines. Because if you understand the rule, like I understood the rule for renting a car, right? I understood,
right.
I didn't meet those rules, but I understood the rules for renting a U-Haul van.
Mm-hmm.
I can meet those rules. I had a driver's license. You know, so they're not designed to hamstring us. They're designed to give us kind of like, you know, a boundary. You know, it's like water, the ocean. Without land, it would just be all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
See, it wouldn't necessarily be effective for anyone. And so by understanding what the parameters are, I can then step in or outside of that based on what
and
it is that I need.
You can create your existence by
exactly,
adapting.
Exactly.
You know, like water, when there's a rock in place, water just goes around. It's like, you
right.
know. It ain't going to try to just beat this, but it beats the rock down eventually by just flowing.
Mm-hmm.
And so be like water. Be fluid.
Right.
Be fluid.
And the thing about changing, doing something different, like you're talking about how you are eating with your left hand because you're
trying
with your right
to.
Hand. But the miraculous thing about that is that you begin to create new neurons and synaptic gaps, synaptic connections in your brain when you
absolutely. Yep, I sure do.
So you keep your brain new and flexible
and growing.
Just
doing different.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Open up frontiers.
Exactly. This is what's happening with children. See, they just have a blank slate. You see, and then they are just. Everything that they do is new. So it's causing them to grow and grow and grow. Their minds to just grow and grow and grow. But for us, after a while, we get into such a routine that we don't even think about changing, you know.
Right.
You know, so that thing about choosing a new way to go to work, it begins to allow your brain to grow because what happens is your mind is mapping the landscape differently. It's like, oh, I haven't seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I haven't done this before.
Wow, what did they do with this? When
right,
did this happen?
Exactly, exactly.
You know, and
exactly.
It keeps you in a state of, how do you say, it keeps you in a state of alertness because you're just looking at, I mean, when you drive the same way all the time, every
right.
day, it's like,
right.
you know, autopilot. You don't
mm-hmm.
look at anything differently. You're seeing the same
right.
old stuff, but
right.
you go a different way. Your mind, you know, jumps up there, alert.
It wakes
focus.
Up. It becomes, it's just, it operates out of a state of awe and wonder.
Absolutely.
That's what spirit does. It allows the mind to stay in a state of awe and wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in that state of awe and wonder, everything is possible, you know. And these are the things, so when I see you talk about creativity and creative adaptability and your tendency to blame and tying your self-worth to situations and, you know, that things could, the living in the falsehood of things are too good to be true and, you know, your attachment to suffering. Those things are all feeding the wrong wolf. You know, they tell the story about two wolves come to your door,
mm-hmm.
and they're both starving. You open your door. Which one lives? The one that lives is the one you feed, right?
Right.
So being in this state that does not allow you to operate in awe and wonder feeds the wrong wolf. Okay, it feeds that other side that keeps you locked into archetypes. That's the word that I was looking for. Families have their own particular archetypes,
right.
you know, that you carry and you learn in them. It keeps you locked in those patterns. It keeps you locked in, you know, being attached to suffering. It keeps you locked in. So all of these things that you're talking to are very interesting to me because of my path into my priesthood, for instance. Right before I was initiated and the reading that I got that said that I needed to be initiated into my priesthood, it said, this child has suffered enough. Okay? That her child, you know, I had suffered enough that I needed to begin to live and to experience joy in my life and so forth and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And my priesthood would kind of realign me into that path of living on with that divine intention, you know, of awe and wonder and joy, right? So when I went to go try to get these, there were some priests, each of us have to go to a priest that we know and ask them to serve as our godparent to kind of teach us. They initiate us. They become responsible for us spiritually, and they guide us and teach, you know, it's a mentoring kind of process.
Right.
So I went to each of the three priests that I knew, okay, and that I knew personally. Now, there were other priests available and other priests, and one young lady who was a friend of mine in the tradition kept saying, go see my ex-boyfriend. He's now an awo. He'll initiate you. Go see him. Go see him. Go see him. But I was so trapped into this other mindset. I was being inflexible, right? So I went to the three priests that I knew. I didn't know my friend's boyfriend, but I knew these other three priests.
Mm-hmm.
And so the one priest that I went to said, okay, come back and see me when you have enough money for initiation. Okay. Another priest that I went to said, okay, but in order for me to initiate you, you're going to have to marry me.
Okay.
Another priest that I went, the third priest that I went to was like upset with me because I stood in my power and in my position of integrity and refused to be questioned. It was this thing over, you know, and unfortunately, you know, as in a lot of traditions, things can be very male-centered.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one female priest asked me about this other priest who, Ifa priest, this one female Ifa priest asked me something about another male Ifa priest, the one who said he wanted to marry me. And I said, you know, listen, I'm not concerned with that man's business because I am not his business as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
You know. And so I stood in that, and that kind of, you know, severed our relationship, you know. And so then I was like, you know, God, what am I going to do here? You know, you say I'm supposed to be initiated. But the one thing the female priest told me that I held on to, even though she wasn't necessarily operating as a pure, clean vessel, she was still carrying a message from God to me.
Mm-hmm.
You see, because God can send messages to anyone. So she says, don't despair, because God knows what you need. Ifa knows what you need. And Ifa hears your prayers, and Ifa will answer you, right? So Ifa had been answering me, but I hadn't been listening.
That's
because
the case
every right, because every once in a while, my friend would go, "Why don't you go talk to this priest? Why don't you go talk to this priest? Why don't you go talk to this priest?" And I'm like, "Oh." So when those three fell through, I called her back up and I said, "Give me his number." So I called this priest, this Ifa priest, and I said, "You know, Baba, this is our honorific to those who are our elders."
Mm-hmm.
In both spiritual,
people who
saw
Black Panther know we call the elders Baba. Okay.
Yeah, or Ia, if they're female,
yeah, Baba,
right? Mother,
Baba or
mother
Ia.
Mother or father, right? So I said, Baba, I had this Ifa reading, right? And Ifa says that I'm to be initiated into Ifa, Baba, and I don't know, you know, Ifa says, but I don't have the money to do it, right? Because it takes money to get supplies and to bring other priests in and all this other stuff, right? And I said, the reading says that the Odu speaks about it being the end of suffering for me. And so this Ifa priest says, it's interesting that you say that to me, because my Odu means the end of suffering. Right? His Odu, all of us, when we're initiated into our priesthood, we have this vibration that we carry that represents who we are in the world. Right? He says, it's interesting that you say that to me. He said, I tell you what, we're going to schedule your initiation. And I said, Baba, I don't have the money, you know. He said, we're going to schedule your initiation because Ifa is going to make sure you get what you need.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, lo and behold, I'm talking to my mother. Now, my mother is Muslim, right? And she doesn't necessarily understand anything about my tradition. In fact, sometimes she's angry because she doesn't necessarily think that the people that I have been dealing with operate with good character. Hold on just one second. Sorry about that. So I say to her, it was totally separate. I had come home. Because Ifa sent me home. Ifa said, pack up all your things and go see your mother, because you need to be by your mother, Kosi. You may lose her suddenly if you're not, right? So I'm like, what? I leave. I drop my job, everything. I just drive, take my dog in one car, and I leave, right? So I get there, and my mother's like, you know, I've watched you struggle with your house. I've watched you do all this stuff. You're trying to get it fixed up. You're doing these things by yourself. Everybody who comes and they say they're going to help you, they don't help you. They hinder you. You know, you've always helped all these other people. She said, I'm going to give you the money that you need to fix up your house. I said, what, Mom? She said, I'm going to give you this money. And I said, wow, some of this money could be used for me to be initiated, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, but I don't want to just take the money and not tell her, because to me, I want to start my priesthood in good character.
Absolutely.
She thinks I'm going to do something with the money and she gives me and I do you. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So my mother doesn't really understand anything about my tradition or whatever else is going on with me or what have you. But I go to my mother and I say, Mom, the money that you're going to give me for the house, I want to take part of it and be initiated because they say it will change my life for the better. She looks at me and she says, I don't care what you do with the money, just as long as it improves your life. Okay? I want it to improve your life. I don't care. I've watched you struggle, do this, and I can do this for you right now in your life, right? And I'm like, what? Wow. So I go to it all happens in a week, right? I call him. He's like, you need to come see your mother. And, you know, while you're here, we're going to schedule you being initiated. What? But I don't have the money. I get there. I drive all the way from New York to Austin, you know, to Chicago. I see my mother. My mother says these things to me. I go back. Now, say, for instance, it was this past Friday, the 3rd of March, right, that I speak to him. He tells me I need to see my mother. I'm like, what? I pack up all my stuff. I leave Sunday. On Friday, he says, I'm setting your initiation date for next week, you know, so it's going to be the 10th, right? So I'm like, but Baba, I don't. He said, just come. We'll figure out. You see your mother. That's important, right? So I get in the car on Sunday, the 5th, right? I drive home. I'm there on the 8th. I have this conversation with my mother. She's like, I don't care what you do, blah, blah, blah. On the 9th, she gives me the money, and the 10th, I'm going to be initiated, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things that you're talking about,
right?
You know, seems so. I was like, wow, this is timely. You know, why do we need to maintain the attachment to suffering anyway? How is it serving us? You know, and that's the question we have to ask. You know?
But some of us are so. We come from. Last week we talked about different soul ages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're at different stages of our soul growth.
Right.
That everyone is not able to see the same thing in the same way. Like, say for instance, they said that in the traditions of the let's do the Magi. Let's say the cards. They say that people who are born under the number eight, the eighth. Whether it's mm-hmm. eight of diamonds, eight of hearts, or eight of spades, eight of clubs, mm-hmm. they say these people never change. You know,
whoa.
Like they're just stuck. They mm-hmm. do not change. Now you take an eight of clubs, which is an intellectual suit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sharing this because I know some of the people, some of the listeners, they know about the different Magi cards and the Eight of Clubs. The clubs is an intellectual suit, and they say mm-hmm. that the Eight of Clubs is so solid they never change. But to me, I've seen Eight of Clubs. They may not change,
mm-hmm.
but what they do is like that snake. They shed that skin and they get
mm-hmm.
better. Let's, mm-hmm. for instance, here you have an Eight of Clubs that was raised as a child to say their prayers every night.
Mm-hmm.
And as a child, they used to say, "Now I lay me down to sleep. You know, I pray the Lord my mm-hmm. soul to keep. If I should mm-hmm. die, blah, blah, blah." That's what little children say. And
mm-hmm.
then as they grow, they still say their prayers every night. But now
mm-hmm.
they're saying the Lord's Prayer.
Right.
You know, "Our
right.
Father
right.
who art in heaven. Thy, you know, thy will be done." And as
right.
they grow spiritually, maybe they want to go into the Islamic faith. They're still saying
mm-hmm.
that prayer every night, but now they're saying, "A'udhu billahi min shaitani rajim." You know?
Right.
So
right.
it's not so much that they need that they get better and better,
right.
you know,
right.
because there is a soul's age in there. Now,
right.
I was reading an article, and it had to do with, what's his name, Jose Stevens, because he has an article on our soul ages and how we
mm-hmm.
relate to one another in relationships. You,
mm-hmm.
you know, to your mother, you to your sister to you, you to your partner.
Mm-hmm.
It's that he was saying that infant souls, if it's an infant soul,
mm-hmm.
they do not relate. They just don't. You know,
mm-hmm.
People are objects to them.
Right.
They can be sociopathic by nature without
mm.
conscience. They just don't
mm.
care. They don't hook up with an infant soul if you want
mm.
to be treated decently. Okay? Then
mm-hmm.
you have your baby souls. And those of you listening to us, y'all know who you are. Unless you're an infant soul and just don't want to admit it. But the baby souls.
Mm-hmm.
Baby souls are very frightened and stick with what they are taught to get by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are very rigid. Their relationships are completely based on the formulas laid out by religion and strict social norms. They never
mm.
question authority or how things have always been done. They
mm.
dictate rules to everyone, but aren't capable of following them. They are the poster children of hypocrisy, but this
mm.
is often not their fault, as they mostly don't even know what hypocrisy is.
Mm.
So Jose was saying that 20% of the world population, those are your baby souls.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the culture teaches about men and women, they uphold. never questioning the status quo. Okay, so in the United States, this largely follows a traditional Christian notion to stay at home for stay-at-home wives and blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. Then you have your young souls.
mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
The young souls are children emotionally and hell-bent on getting away with as much as possible through pure bravissimo, bold-faced lies. Self-aggrandizement and recklessness. These are your young souls. Their idea of a relationship is to be with eye candy. Okay? There is no honor among thieves. In their current paradigm, you know, they just do whatever they want to do. And they dominate over whatever expensive property needs to be shown off publicly. And so you move on as you mature. You move on to the mature or adult, or the adolescent souls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because souls have stages, and we see them walking around in front of us every day, all day. So which one am I? Which one are you? Okay, adolescent souls are relationship oriented. They are hypnotized by relationships and focus on them obsessively. You ever see people just got to be in a relationship for the sake of being in a relationship? It's like it don't matter. You know, like they get out of one relationship and they just got to jump right into another one. Here you go with your adolescent souls. Everything is about the relationship, good ones and bad ones. They suffer and they struggle and they love passionately. You know what I'm saying? Eventually they learn to enjoy them. All right? These are your adolescent souls. There are the people who rally behind causes and rebel against the status quo, often to their own detriment, your adolescent souls. Mm-hmm. And then you move on to your older souls, philosophically oriented souls. They value relationship, but they also take them in stride.
Right.
They are fairly practical about them. They are very generous and kind, but also don't take crap from anybody. If it doesn't work out, they don't take it personally. They are fairly unattached to gender roles and are quite relaxed about them. They tend not to be too zealous, understanding that everything works out in the long run over many lifetimes.
Right.
They are compassionate, kind, responsible, and tend to mind their own business, preferring to find some way to enjoy themselves no matter what.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps for now this may be, you know, a mini guideline, you know, to how to best manage your relationships in life. But it will still be a while before the majority of the souls have grown up and are at the most mature levels. Meanwhile, the games will be played, the karma will roll, and many lessons will be learned, you know?
Yeah.
And like you say, you got to go with the flow. And once you begin to embrace that, and realize that you're creating your own reality based upon the output, your output, you're going to be messed up.
Right.
You're going to always be messed up, you know? So,
if you're not approaching it from a certain perspective. And, you know, when I hear you talk about the nature of souls, how can I say? It reminds me of the, intellect of cells, the intelligence of our bodies at a molecular level.
Uh-huh.
Now, because when I hear you talk about the types of souls, right, I see these things also playing out in cultural dynamics. Like Western culture, African culture, Hindu culture, Asian culture. And so you began to see what types of souls you're actually encountering and dealing with globally.
Absolutely.
You know, from their cultural perspective, you really see how young Western culture is based on its fixation with certain things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you see that some souls have returned to try to elevate this situation, right, over here in Western society. And the thing is that that's why I said it kind of reminds me of the intelligence of the body at its molecular level, because each one of our cells contains the DNA information for making a whole entire another one of us, right? But
right.
Each of those cells turns off, you know, like it understands what it's supposed to be and what its job is.
Absolutely.
And,
you know how many
like
people
it says,
don't realize that
right.
When a baby is being born, those cells, how does the cell that makes the nose know it's a nose cell and not an
right.
eye cell?
Right. It turns off all the other information.
Absolutely.
And so they have shown that, like, they took a heart out of the organ of a human body, right? They took a heart, they took a liver, they took a kidney, and they put it up into a blender and blended all of those cells together. And then they poured the cells out into a dish and came back later only to discover that the cells had grouped themselves into heart
what
cells, liver cells, right.
Into the original self.
Right. So the cell, they talk about how the cell turns off all of the other information except for being a nose cell or fingernail or skin or lung or heart or liver or kidney. Bladder, it turns off all the other information. In fact, that's what cancer is. It is the cell in the body turning on all of the
all
other
of the
information.
Things going crazy.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
It goes insane. And basically, the cell goes insane.
Yes. You know,
so,
and people can't look at the fact that our body, when we open up our mouths and we talk, or when we think,
mm-hmm.
our cells are hearing what we're saying. Our cells are listening to what we're thinking. People don't give the cell the recognition and the intelligence that it deserves.
Right. Exactly. And the different minds, you know, they are coming. I said, this is how wise our ancestors were. They used to say, oh, those are old wise tales and all this other stuff. But this is how wise they were, are. And passed on that information to us, right? You remember how they say, what did your gut tell you?
Well,
if your gut said don't do it, then don't do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're now discovering that your intestines has its own mind.
Yes.
Okay? So it has a brain. Just like your head has a brain, it has a brain, you know what I mean? And they're discovering that each one of these major systems in our body has its own kind of intellectual brain, right?
And if we take it as high as it can go, our creator is the master of stem cells.
Right, come on.
Because it can create every single cell, every single one of us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the creator is the master of all stem cells. Now you're taking stem cells from this and putting it
right.
over here for it to create, you know, another finger and another arm.
Right.
People
right.
say, "Oh, this is freaky. This is no,
no, no." It's looking at how the universe loves perfection, and when it finds something that's perfect, it continues to use that model. So if you look at our bodies, we have a cell. We have a universe in that cell. We have a nucleus and all of the planets that flow around that nucleus, the protons, the neurons, you know what I mean? They're all suspended around that nucleus, that atom in our DNA, in the cells of our body. And if we look at our universe, that pattern exists. We are all cells on this big giant cell that flows around. You see what I'm saying? You could call it a proton or a neutron or electron, whatever, around the sun. It keeps building that same block because the universe loves perfection.
Perfection.
And once it finds perfection, it doesn't deviate. It is only when something that is necessary. That's why we say in our tradition that we have 401 Orisha, because that one always talks about the possibility of something new being created. Okay? So the universe loves perfection, but always allows for the possibility of that one, for something new to be created. And that's how we have to move through life. We love the perfection of who we are, but we always allow for the possibility of the one. That one, the newness.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? We're getting ready to come a little bit to a close here, but I want to segue. I want to jump off. Just jump right into and let everybody know that we didn't get to it. We didn't get to it tonight. But because we just finished talking about how our body talks to itself and how it realigns itself with its intellect. Next show, we're going to talk about how our body and how our mind and how we intuitively talk to each other without opening up our mouths. How we intuitively connect to our ancestors who are ever present, wrapped all around us, and how it's not a boogie thing. It's a natural thing. That energy.
Right.
Go ahead, Arima. I know you want to jump.
I'm just going to say that our ancestors live in us, in our DNA. Their memories are a part of our genetic memory. We cannot separate from them. It's impossible, you know.
So don't think that they're not communicating with you 24/7, whether you know it or not.
Right.
24/7. You walk with them. They walk with you. They're in you. They whisper in your ear. You know, now you may call them angels. You may call God. Because your creator has given your ancestors the wherewithal to be able to do all of this. So don't think we're not talking about your connectedness to your creator. Your creator's in charge of all of this. Now, next show, we're going to talk about the clairs. We're going to talk about clair senses. This collective word phrase includes any or all types of psychic sensitivity corresponding to the senses, your sense of seeing, that's your clairvoyance, your sense of hearing, that's your clairaudience, your sense of feeling, which will be your clairsentience, your sense of smelling, which will be your clairgustance, your sense of tasting, touching, clairagency, gustance is tasting, and clairempathy, that's your clairemotions. And each one of us has one or more of these clairs. And if you're not aware of it, maybe it's because you haven't activated it yet. But we're going to talk about all of this in our next show.
Okay.
Oh, girlfriend, this was a great show. And I want you to know, this board was lit up fiercely. We got new lights on this board.
That's good.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, I've enjoyed the conversation.
Well, I can ask, is there anyone out there that want to jump in here and say something to Fabio and I before we turn off the lights, because the sun is going down and I'm looking forward to the 11th and looking forward to daylight savings time. Oh, I'm just going to cherish with more daylight. Okay, if you really want to say anything or you want to share your thoughts with us right now, all you got to do is press 1 and we'll open up the line for you. I guess that's it for bio.
Okay.
You want to say good night?
Good night, everyone. We'll see you soon. Or talk to you soon.
Yep, and I want to say thank you so much for sharing this hour with us. We've enjoyed sharing with you, and you can also send Duchess an email at duchessontheair@gmail.com if you want to speak privately, and I'll get in touch with Fabio, and we'll do our best to respond to you by email. Take care.
Yep.
Have a good night. Night, Fabio.
Good night. Good night. See you soon.
Thank you.